Members, welcome to this important meeting. I'm with the chairperson here. She will say a few words before we start. We hope that we will have an engaging morning to look at the proposed bill led by the Deputy Minister. Please do convey our well wishes to the Minister so that he recovers quickly. We would like to get him back here, running as usual, a great speech. I would like to say at the outset that the bill that is going to be placed before us, I am sure members will agree that in processing it, we will require to act as we've done so far together, and that we will conclude, though I'm starting at the end, that that it requires public input, that there's a draft program to do that. So I want to start at the end of that process and say that we intend to go that route. So it's going to be important that in whatever we say, we must recognize that opportunities will arise for us to engage with this matter much more than we will be able to do today. So, Ntate Matiba, when I don't give you an opportunity to speak today, don't wait for me at the corner there and break my neck. You'll get another opportunity later to speak. This is a very crucial bill that I think we are meant to believe. Would you like to go about in a few words, say welcome, and then we will give over to the Deputy Minister to lead on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. I'll say in a few words, welcome. Indeed, welcome everyone to this meeting. We hope that we'll have a fruitful engagement. It's a very important meeting in line with our joint rules that the two committees need to, from time to time, have this type of meeting so that we have a common approach to whatever legislation that is invested to be passed. And we won't have hassles. Welcome everyone. Welcome members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable, who was part of the meeting that took place here before we arose, told me that because I opened the door at about 10. He says to me, you know what we were discussing here, the relationship between the NA and the NCOP. I said to him, we do not want to discuss it. We are here together. We're not theorizing about it. So it's a very useful exercise that we undertake. We hope we'll do so continually. So, Ntate Eunice Karim, please lead us with, and maybe you may also just want to introduce the team quickly, just those who are here today, and then we can proceed here.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairs. Firstly, we thank the two committees for organizing a joint meeting. We think this is particularly valuable, although obviously you two officers have their distinct roles, and I know that to proceed accordingly. We also convey the outset our minister's considerable apologies that he won't be here, and if Chairperson Sonodi is concerned that he wants to see the minister running around, he must imagine I feel that even more, because right now I'm doing twice the running that I normally do with one single salary package. So, if anybody has a vested interest, it's me to see him back. And he'll soon be back. And in fact, he is in fact leading the ministry and the department. He's very active. Some of you would have heard him over radio last week. And so it's only that he can't fly, but otherwise he's fully functional. And he conveys his good wishes to this joint sitting. You know, of course, he was the chair of a committee in the NCOP, and so he's especially pleased to see that both committees are at least meeting for this briefing today together. And let me add that it also is a bill, obviously, that this bill that's before us, which has been a lot in the public domain. Essentially, there are various strengths to this bill, various points of origin, but substantially it's cohering under the State of Local Government Report, which you're familiar with, and the LGCAS, which you're also familiar with. Essentially, one of the themes that emerged from the report and one of the attempts at strategic addressing of the problem is around the issue of how you relate the political structure with the administration. You know that there are tensions between the politicians in a municipality and the administrators. And this bill seeks to address that in part. It's not going to actually solve all the problems. It's part of what the ministry and department has declared it's seeking to do over a time. After the consultation that's required, the most concerted consultation possible, we are seeking to review aspects of the model. And this can be seen as the first plank of that, the first prong of that. One of the issues that this committee has raised, and the committee when I chaired it, Peter reminds me, by the way, that Peter Smith, that seeing Fani Lowe here reminds us how old he and I are. And in fact, the chairperson of the committee as well, we've been around in different ways since 1994, and we're still in some or other form doing the same roles. I think he's hinting that we should move on. Peter Smith, yeah, but he will speak for himself because, you know, some of us believe that you only go when you're 95 years old, so we belong to, I won't deal with the anecdote I was about to say, which you're familiar with, about China's leadership at the moment, but I'll come back to this, which is that, essentially we want to make something very clear, that the issue that the press, the media has focused on, has substantially been on the prohibition of office bearers, of structures of political parties from branch to national level, from serving as managers and senior managers accountable to them. Collectively, let's say senior managers, which includes the municipal manager. That is not part of the bill. There are other aspects of the bill that are very good and are even more worthy of attention, but this is how it's played out in the media. That's understandably. Let's deal with that very quickly. We must just firstly that the state law advisors and the various legal teams are very clear on our side that the bill is constitutional in that respect and as a whole, obviously. No doubt Parliament will apply its mind to that, but we are clear about that. Secondly, that we must be very clear, there's a lot of misunderstanding in the media. There is no prohibition on any individual from the clean air to the municipal manager participating in political activities. That is their constitutional right, and Parliament or the executive can't take it away from them. So people are free to serve in political structures. In this country, you can't restrict anybody. However, what we are saying is that you cannot serve simultaneously as an office bearer, which is specifically defined as Jackie Mayepe will do in a moment. May I just answer Chairperson, Chairperson, just ask them to quickly introduce themselves, because you've got a very new team here. It's a much younger team, Chairperson, than you've been familiar with. It's an emerging team. It's a big team, I know, but not all of them will be here all the time. Some of them are here because they're acquainting themselves with how to manage Parliament, and they themselves will take responsibility for processing bills. So maybe we should start with Inslaka Nipo, who is the advisor to the Minister. He'll explain who he is, and then go around. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairpersons and members. I'm Inslaka Nipo Godwana, Special Advisor to the Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Mike Silvan. I'm the Portfolio Head for Provincial and Municipal Government Support.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Teboho Motlasuping, Senior Manager, Institutional Development Systems.
Good morning, my name is Fani Lowe, Legal Services from the Department.
Good morning, members. My name is Vu Yonda from the Department Legal Services.
Nakedi Munyela from Municipal HR Systems.
I'm Brutus Malada, I'm a senior researcher in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Larry Mashida from the Minister.
Morning, Honorable Members. I'm Andre Gaum, the Minister's Legal Advisor.
My name is J.K. Maipa. I'm the Senior Manager responsible for Municipal HR Systems in the department.
Just, I'm part of the furniture as well. Just in going to minister.
Part of the new furniture, Fanilo would say. But J.K. will be leading the team because he's been processing the bill through the executive structures. So, basically, what he's saying is that there's no restriction on people being politically active, whether they're cleaners or municipal managers. What he's simply saying is they can't simultaneously serve on the executive structures, usually defined as the chair, deputy chair, secretary, deputy secretary, treasurer, and so on, and be a senior manager, including a municipal manager. People have a choice. It's not as if they're forced to do one or the other. So as they're currently serving both roles, as it were, this bill will not apply, understandably, retrospectively. But once the bill becomes an act and is accepted by Parliament, if it is, then you'll find that that can't be done. We're also saying that, you know, that the reasons why this has to be is familiar with you. And we've covered this ground substantially in the local government turnaround strategy presentations and the state of local government report. But to put it in a nutshell, often one finds, not often, a significant number of cases we find that the mayor in a municipality is, say, an ordinary rank and file member of a political party. But the senior managers, or the municipal manager or others answerable to him or her, they are senior office bearers of the political party from which the mayor comes. So you have a situation where, in the municipality, the mayor will tell a municipal manager, senior manager, to do something, and he's obviously the boss. But the senior manager or manager might turn back and say, no, but we deployed you in this position. I'm not going to do it. So in the party political structures, the employee, as it were, is the boss. In the municipal state structures, the politician is the boss. And finding that relationship is difficult and hasn't been working. And that's a lot of other reasons that Jackie Maiepe will take you through, but you're familiar with most of them. But essentially, this bill seeks to provide uniform standards for public administration at local government level. With these uniform standards and uniform frameworks, each municipality will shape its particular human resources regime or dispensation according to its budget, its specific needs, the number of staff, the way it orients its staff, and so on. What we are seeking to do, as Jackie will explain in a moment, is provide some sort of uniform framework. And there are various aspects of the bill, when you take you through it, you'll see, which also seek to ensure a particular relationship between the state and the party. It is wrong for the state to assume the role of the party, just as it's wrong for the party to assume the role of the state. And what this bill seeks to do is find an interactive relationship between party and state. Essentially, our view is that, of course, we have political parties putting candidates forward, and parties have the right to have strategic and political oversight over their representatives and the structures which their representatives run. But that strategic and political oversight must not translate itself into micromanagement. And what this bill seeks to say is that, yes, parties have elections manifestos. Parties decide through list and ward elections their candidates. Parties pass policies. It is through that they must exercise discipline over their elected public representatives. If a public representative doesn't perform according to a party's needs, that party has disciplinary structures to attend to that deviation or aberration. But one cannot confuse that role, which is legitimate of a political party, and each party will exercise this differently according to its values and norms, from the fact that a municipality cannot be caused to suffer because of a political party's inability to exercise. And in fact, it's the poor and the disadvantaged out there who suffer the most with the current practices. So in short, we are saying that this bill seeks to provide a particular approach to the party and the state which is conducive to a healthy, effective democracy. Having said that, Chairperson, if it's okay with you, we hand over to Jackie, and then between Jackie and me, we will respond to the questions, and we'll bring upon the other many members who are here from our department to help as well. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, dear honourable members. I think my brief is just, you know, to quickly run you through the bill that has been published by the ministry. First, I'll give you an overview of the presentation. We'll first look, you know, at the legal context of you know, the World Bill, the challenges that triggered, you know, the bill. We will also look into policy responses that the department and the ministry came up with. We will also have a look at the objectives of this legislative intervention. Then that will also be followed by proposed amendments, which I'll take you through all the proposed amendments in the bill. And after that, then we'll have to pause and, you know, field and take questions from honourable members. The first thing, you know, relates to the legal context of the bill. The Municipal Systems Act 2000 first provides a legal framework for local public administration that we know of, as well as you know, human resource management and development systems in local government. The Act empowers municipalities to adopt appropriate systems and procedures that would ensure a fair, efficient, effective, and transparent personnel administration. The Act also empowers the Minister to regulate the setting of uniform standards that the DM was referring to for municipal systems and procedures. Since the enactment of the Municipal Systems Act in the year 2000, there hasn't been an attempt, you know, to bring to you know, for the minister to set the uniform standards that are referred to in the Act, in particular in Section 72 of the Municipal Systems Act. The absence of this uniform standards has had some unintended consequences, and I can just list a few of them. This includes having used municipalities to adopt disparate or different systems and practices that will also include remuneration and conditions of service. The absence of these systems also encourage municipalities, you know, to appoint inadequately qualified personnel, you know, in leadership positions, with an average of 3 years, you know, nationally, or lack of, you know, proper competencies that might be required, you know, to provide leadership in these important institutions of government. It also impacts negatively on the ability of municipalities to build the capacity to perform their functions. The absence of the systems and procedures also, you know, blurred political and administrative, you know, career lines, you know, with negative, you know, spin-offs on service delivery, as we always see a lot of, you know, media reports, you know, making headlines and so on. It makes it difficult, you know, to entrench a culture of increased performance and accountability through the enforcement of employment contracts and performance agreements. Currently, as at the end of March this year, we've had signed performance agreement by municipal managers, you know, we're standing at 79%. For managers directly reporting to municipal managers, we're then standing at 76%. What I'm trying to explain is that you'd notice that there's a shortfall in terms of ensuring that, you know, we have 100% compliance and senior managers in municipalities can then take responsibility to, you know, implement the IDPs and SDGs and then also be able to account to the municipal council in relation to the commitments that municipalities, you know, commit themselves to deliver on. The absence of these systems also, you know, created a laissez faire, you know, whereby dismissed employees would jump from one municipality to another, you know, without any. Action being taken against them. What it means is that a person, you know, one manager will be, you know, dismissed for fraud in municipality A and then will tomorrow move to municipality B. And, you know, for as long as he or she is politically connected, it doesn't make sense. It also makes it cumbersome for the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and other statutory bodies, provinces, SALGA, and so on, you know, to monitor and support, you know, effectively monitor and support municipalities in this particular area. Again, the honourable members could be aware, in the year 2006, an attempt was made by the then minister to promulgate the municipal performance regulations for municipal managers and managers directly accountable to them. What happened is that the implementation of those regulations, you know, attracted a lot of legal disputes from some municipalities with, you know, major financial consequences. The case at hand I can always share with is the Umbodi case that we had in the KZN, where a municipal manager was appointed with a qualification lower than a metric, lower than a B degree, as prescribed in the 2006 regulation. The ministry then, at the time, then challenged the decision of the council to appoint that particular individual as unqualified. Because the council and the MEC could not resolve it, they ended up, you know, in court, fighting the whole battle in court. The court ruled in favor of the municipal council, which means they set aside the provision of the Municipal Performance Regulation 2006, which sought to prescribe a minimum appointment requirement for persons appointed as municipal managers countrywide, saying it was not within the powers of the minister to regulate that particular, you know, minimum appointment requirement. But the Act was clear, says a person appointed as municipal manager should have appropriate expertise and skills. The question here was what appropriate expertise and skills meant. Municipalities did not go and over, you know, a step further to really try and define what that meant. With the result that municipalities could just appoint everybody, not taking into account, you know, the requisite skills, competencies, and qualifications that, you know, such individuals should possess on appointment. The local government, the study on local government, state of local government in South Africa that was conducted in the year 2009 also revealed that there was a serious leadership and governance challenges in municipalities, that a number of municipalities were poorly governed or dysfunctional due to inability to recruit and retain skilled personnel. And we are of the opinion that this is also a result of the current grading and remuneration system that municipalities have adopted, you know, since 2000. That accountable local government and the rule of law have collapsed in some municipalities due to corruption, nepotism, patronage, and so on. As the honourable members are aware, Cabinet approved the local government turnaround strategy in the in December 2009 that unveiled several proposals, you know, to turn around local government. This included, amongst others, a review of legislation that impacts on service delivery. The Municipal Systems Act was one such legislation that was seen to be impending, you know, initiatives by municipalities to build the necessary capacity, you know, to fulfill their constitutional mandate. The bill is intended, you know, to enable the minister to set uniform standards for municipal systems and procedures, and it adds a convention in some of the shortcomings that we've just highlighted, I've just highlighted, you know, earlier on. This includes the ones on minimum appointment requirements, competencies, skills, and so on. And issues on, you know, political and administrative interface that the DM, you know, referred to earlier on. The objectives of this bill are to set uniform systems and procedures for municipalities, that is both for senior managers and staff below, but will also create a career local public administration that allows for increased mobility across staff, you know, in the sector. Currently, what is happening is that, you know, systems, should I say, the systems and procedures adopted by municipalities don't speak to one another, with the result that it's even difficult to transfer second, you know, staff as and when a need arrives. One can cite the issue, one of the big issues that you know, is behind the whole problem could be, apart from the remuneration and conditions of such, could be the pension issues, you know, where you've got, you know, a multiplicity of pension funds that are operating with different different contributions by employer, different contributions by employees, and so on, with different payouts in the long run. The systems will ensure consistency between the systems and procedures adopted by and standards set by the bill. I mean, the bill will ensure that. It will also assist municipalities to build a skill space, you know, necessary to exercise their powers and perform their functions, by appointing suitably competent and skilled personnel. The bill will also seek to set the scene for professionalization of local public administration and HR. It will also entrench a culture of improved performance and service delivery by targeting the time frames for concluding employment contracts and performance agreements by municipal managers and managers reporting them to them. It will also enable the minister and other statutory bodies, you know, to monitor and support municipalities properly, because right now one of the problems that we you know, the minister and the department faces is if municipalities are applying variant systems and procedures, you can't even make a comparison between municipality A and B. So once we have uniform system that will allow for the minister and other statutory bodies to start to make comparisons to see whether municipalities are, you know, transforming in the right direction, you know, in an effort to build the capacity to deliver services to their local communities. I will now take you know, honourable members, through the different sections of clauses of the bill. Starting with the first clause, that's clause one, which deals with the definition of, which deals with definition of, that the bill inserts two definitions. First is the definition of a municipal manager and the definition of a political office. Clause one, you know, seeks to, it's transferring the meaning of municipal manager from the Structures Act to the Systems Act, because if you honourable members are aware, the definition of municipal manager in the Systems Act is cross-referenced to the meaning of municipal manager as contained in the Structures Act. So we you know, the benefit, you know, is migrating that definition from the Structures Act now into the Systems Act. And that will mean a person appointed in terms of Section 54. So we're inserting a new Section 54 in the Municipal Systems Act. Again, the bill, you know, gives a definition of a political office in relation to a political party or structure thereof to mean the position of chairperson, deputy chairperson, secretary, deputy secretary or treasurer of the party nationally or in any province, region or other area that could include branch in which the party operates. And any position in the party equivalent to a position referred to above, irrespective of the title designated to that particular position. This might refer, you know, cross cross party, you know, titles and definition of office titles and designation. We will deal with this one in detail later on.
Sorry, members, I created a precedent. I couldn't sit without drinking something, the hot beverage. I created a precedent. So it's okay, you can walk out, grab yourself a cup of tea and rejoin us. Otherwise, it's going to get cold. So you are not breaking a rule. Let's give them a 2 minutes break. Let's say 2 minutes to do that, and then we'll proceed. Sorry to do that. Okay. All right. Let's start. Sorry, let's proceed. We're just going through the definition today. Your pace. Just go further in areas that you may suspect you may have dealt with or familiar with. You are going at the pace of a village cow. Just go a little faster, members. You know what? But also, you must be members. You must guide me because some of this material we have dealt with. So my pace might be mine and not yours. So the order of things must be yours, not mine. But I do have to express my view. So please go ahead, Chief, but try and pick up pace a little bit here.
Clause number 2 is with the inception of Section 54 in the Act, appointment of municipal managers. What is the particular clause? It seeks to provide for the appointment of municipal managers and acting management. Ex-municipal managers, as you probably are aware that, you know, the MSA in its current form did not make provision for acting appointments and so on. So this is bringing in, you know, acting appointments. Also provide for procedures and competency criteria for appointment of municipal managers and ex-municipal managers. That a contract between a municipality and a person appointed as a municipal manager and or ex-municipal, you know, is not and void if that particular individual does not meet prescribed requirements as prescribed, the skills, competencies, and qualifications, or an appointment has been made otherwise in contravention of the provisions of the Act. The consequences of appointments or contract made or concluded in contravention of this section, advertisement of posts nationally and secondment of suitably qualified persons by the MEC in the event that the municipality is unable to find a suitably qualified MM, or secondment of suitably qualified, you know, persons by the minister if the MEC, you know, fails to second a suitably qualified person within a period of 90 days. We're still on clause 2. That the next issue here is about, and the bill also places an obligation on municipalities not to report on recruitment and selection outcome to the both to the minister in the province, and then the minister will then, you know, report to the MEC first, and then the MEC will report to the minister. this, you know, was intended, you know, to enforce compliance with the statutory provisions once the bill has been approved. And it also, you know, makes provision for intervention by the MEC through the IGR dispute resolution mechanism or, you know, through a declaratory order. It also makes provision for the intervention by the minister if the MEC fails to take appropriate steps within the stipulated period. I think I've already dealt with that. But finally, it also makes provision for a waiver of appointment requirements in the event that a municipality has advertised and re-advertised and, you know, it's not in a position to attract a suitable qualified person to that particular area. I think an example here that we've always spoken of as the DR provider and so on around the country where, you know, it's just difficult sometimes for some of these municipalities to, you know, attract suitably qualified in their fold. The bill also amends, you know, Section 56 of the Act to make provision for more or less similar to all the amendments that are introduced in Section 54A. What this means is all the amendments that I've just gone through, you know, in relation to the appointment of municipal managers, they also apply in this particular category. So Section 56 managers directly accountable to the municipal managers. The bill also inserts a new Section 56A, which deals with the limitation of political rights of municipal managers and managers directly accountable to them. As the DM indicated, this is the one area where, you know, which has been causing some rumbles on the ground. And I can just indicate that because of, you know, the political infighting, because of political administrative interface problems, it was decided that maybe we should, you know, come up with this amendment to ensure that persons appointed as municipal managers, or should I say municipal managers and managers, you know, directly accountable to them, do not hold political office, you know, in a permanent, temporary, or acting capacity. And that, you know, I won't go into length because the DMS already, you know, taken us through some of the examples. I wouldn't want to mention, but I can think of two cases, the Nkangala and Mangaung cases, where you find the mayor as an ordinary member and the MM is a chairperson, branch chairperson, or PEC, and so on. That cannot create problems. This limitation of rights, however, does not take away the constitutional right of managers to join political parties of choice and to participate in the activities of those political parties. And this particular provision, if the bill is enacted into law, shall not apply retrospectively, which means the existing contract of serving municipal managers and managers directly accountable to them will run their full life until they expire. The new appointees will then have to make a choice. The bill also make an amendment to Section 57 of the Act, which deals with the appointment and employment contract and performance agreement of municipal managers and managers reporting to them. Specifically, there's a move in order to tighten time frames within which, you know, municipal managers and managers reporting to them must sign performance agreements, employment contracts and performance agreements. Because there are incidents, you know, that, you know, always drop in that space. Municipalities have got MMs and Section 56 managers who have not signed employment contracts for an X number of years. When, you know, they transgress the code of conduct that is applicable to them, it becomes then difficult for municipalities or municipal councils, you know, to discipline those particular individuals. But again, with regards to the signing of performance agreement, that's why we said there has been a lag in terms of ensuring that they've got specific people who are, you know, who'd commit to deliver on specific priorities that the municipalities have committed themselves to deliver in the IDPs and SDPs. So this bill, you know, seeks to, you know, ensure that municipalities take control of that particular area. They also, the bill also may provide for the nullification of the contract in the event that a manager fails to sign a performance agreement within the stipulated period. 60 days in the case of newly appointed managers, and then 30 days annually thereafter. I'm trying to move faster. The bill also requires that, you know, employment contracts that are, you know, signed by these managers should be consistent with standards set nationally by the minister. The bill seeks also to delete Section 57 of the Principal Act, giving discretionary powers to municipalities to extend the fixed-term contracts of MMs to managers reporting to them, which simply means to stabilize administration and ensure that you know, we are able to, municipalities are not going through a continual learning process. Each tenure of a new council, you bring in new managers, so that that's continuity and experienced personnel are kept, you know, within that particular municipality. So the division of this particular, you know, section in the principal act, you know, seeks to just stabilize administration by ensuring that these people can be kept in the bench to take you know, over the leadership of that particular municipality in the long run, if they meet all the required competencies. The bill inserts a new Section 57 in the Act to regulate the employment of municipal employees who have been dismissed. In particular, it seeks to, you know, regulate, to prescribe, but it gives the minister the power to regulate cooling off periods, you know, for different cases of dismissals, like we'll have fraud. Maybe when we prescribe regulation, we could think of saying maybe if a person was dismissed from a municipality because of fraud, maybe this one should not be employed. But whether that is constitutional or not, we will need to go into, you know, some debate into that. Or whether you're saying they could be appointed after 2, 3, 4, 5 years, sexual harassment 4 years, criminal conviction, and so on and so on. I'm saying those are some of the categories that we might need to look at a later stage. The bill also inserts the new Section 59 to provide for the minister to make regulation relating to the remuneration, benefits, and conditions of employment of MMs and managers directly accountable to them. This is just to create a senior management cadre within the, you know, municipalities that through the introduction of uniform systems that can ensure that, you know, municipalities, you know, have more or less similar systems, and, you know, staff can move easily between those municipalities. Because right now the current trend is, come the end of the term, municipal manager and managers are coming, you know, they have to move and look for jobs elsewhere. When actually those people, you know, could be, you know, if they are, you know, they prove themselves to be good, you know, they could be moved elsewhere in other municipalities that, you know, would really need their services. The bill also makes an amendment to Section 66 of the Principal Act to provide for the approval of self-establishment of a municipality by the respective municipal council. Currently, the Act provides that the municipal self-establishment will be approved by the municipal manager. And, you know, on hindsight, like what we thought was... it does not make, you know, strategic sense in the fact that a structure needs funding, budget, and so on linked to it. And the budget rests in the council. It's the council that decides how much budget should go towards, you know, which particular priorities and so on. That when you prioritize, you know, you allocate budget against priorities, a municipality will then look into the structure and say, which section of the structure do we need to reinforce, you know, capacity and so on. But also, it's intended to deal with some of the bloating of our municipal administration in areas that are not necessarily service orientated. And one also is trying to discourage the appointment of person against, you know, non-approved folks or folks that, you know, whenever they're on the we can indicate that I think over the past 2-3 years what we've seen a trend whereby there's been a blocking of administration in the office of the MM, you know, the mayor, the speaker and so on. But that will seek, you know, a proper dispensation that will assist, you know, to provide support staff for those particular offices. The bill also seeks to amend Section 67 of the Principal Act to require that all systems and procedures adopted by a municipality in terms of Section 67 are in tandem with uniform standards determined by the Minister in terms of Section 72. Currently, that is not the case, and often this leads to a situation whereby municipalities view any national standard set by the minister as complementary to what they are having, or they choose whether, you know, they want to, you know, apply that or not. And we hope this will minimize some of the legal litigation cases that I referred to, you know, under the challenges where we have to be in court, you know, trying to defend some of these issues. The bill inserts a new Section 71 in the Act to enable the Minister to regulate mandating processes for organized local government. I should emphasize here that there is no intention whatsoever for the Minister to accept the powers of organized local government. What the bill seeks to do is just to say we need a process whereby, through the mandating processes set by SALGA and, you know, trade unions, before the SALGA goes to, you know, the bargaining council, they should filter, you know, whatever mandate they are having through with the minister before they move on, so that is also informed of whatever, you know, policy direction and concur with whatever mandate they are taking forward to the bargaining council, because often that has some repercussions. We have an incident whereby last year municipalities raised their salaries by 13%. Up until today, we still have municipalities that could not, that were not able to implement the agreed, you know, salary increase that was concluded in the bargaining council because of affordability problems, you know, between different municipalities. The bill, as I indicated earlier on, seeks to align service national standards set by the minister and systems and procedures that are adopted by municipalities to ensure that standards set by the minister will represent your national overarching framework that will inform all other systems and policies that are then adopted by municipalities. And it also seeks to deal with issues of the accreditation of you know, pension funds, which is one of the problem areas. Probably to also look into the issue of making it compulsory for all municipal employees to contribute or to participate in pension arrangements that are there in local government. And, you know, to try and rationalize some of the contributions that, you know, varied contributions that are currently prevailing in the sector. The bill also seeks to amend Section 106 of the Principal Act to enable the minister to conduct an investigation into a municipality of non-performance and maladministration in the event that the MEC for local government fails to conduct such an investigation within a period of 90 days. Currently, you know, the bill, you know, does say the MEC will do that, and it did not even prescribe a particular time frame. So what the bill is to say, by a particular time frame, the MEC should have acted, failing with the minister, if he is aware of any such non-performance and maladministration, he then can request the MEC for local government to investigate, failing which then he can intervene. The bill also about it, an amendment to the code of conduct for councillors to provide that a councillor who knowingly votes in favour of a resolution of council committee of council is guilty of breaching a code for councillors. This was just thought to be one of those missing things that needed to be added to ensure that councillors can take their responsibility for whatever, full responsibility and accountability on their actions. The bill also makes provision for transitional measures, which I think I've already touched on, that existing employment contracts will not be tampered with. They will have to continue their full span of life, and the majority of them, I think, are coming to an end in between 2011 and 2012, and then where after then the new provisions and probably the regulations that are proposed in the bill will then be in place, and then will then take effect from that particular. Thank you.
Members, that's the presentation of the bill and the political motivation as articulated by the Deputy Minister. Now you have a chance to ask questions. Honourable Dumisile Nhleke, Honourable Tunka, Jeff Smith, Honourable Adrian Williams, Honourable. Who else? What? Domain. In that order, please. Don't wait for me to call you after this. I've called you now. I won't repeat that.
Jefferson, thanks for the presentation from the department and the proposed amendments. On page 19, I'll start at page 19. Whereby they are saying section 57A of the Principal Act regulates the employment municipal employees who have been dismissed. Chair, I just want to check, it talks to only municipal employees and not to mayors, because if there are mayors who has been charged for misconduct or misuse, mismanagement of funds, and maybe they are charged and taken off the political arena, are they eligible as mayors to be reappointed in other municipalities in the capacity of being municipal managers? Because I don't see that amendment or insertion in this bill. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I will start with page 10. Page 10, Chair. Chair, when we were doing interventions in terms of section 129, what we realized is that, as indicated here, you're talking about chairperson, secretaries, and up to treasurer. But in most of the municipalities, it is not necessarily these people who are either at senior level or at local at the lower levels of employment at those particular municipalities are actually additional members. And the damage is not done by this leadership that we're focusing on. Because you see, when you say who are in executive, and it's happening across the country, other municipalities who did not have problems actually are faced with this specific problem where leadership interferes, deals with all those. And I'm just saying, are you not seeing a gap there? Because you see, you might try to be solving a problem that you're not solving. You see. Now, how do you deal with that particular situation? Take into account that you don't want people to lose out to become employees of municipalities because they have the necessary skills and all that. You see. Now, I'm not sure as to how do you deal with that, because presently, when you look at municipalities that are having problems now, it is not necessarily this leadership that you're talking to. You see. And the second point here, have been raised by my colleague here, but I think it is important, not necessarily to mayors, you know, to councillors, because you see, you're referring to mayors, but in actual fact it might be the rest of the other councillors too. Now, how do you deal with that situation? Because we are now singling out employees whilst you're leaving their bosses who are doing the same thing. Now, how do we deal with that situation? Thank you.
Chair, my first question is about the consultation process with SALGA. And I know we'll have public hearings, I presume we'll talk to them, but just from the department's point of view, is SALGA happy with every provision here? And specifically, is there any sense from SALGA that they feel that some of it is intrusive in respect of their perceived status of local government? Secondly, I find this a strange bill, actually, because in the kind of package of stuff that we're anticipating, we understand there's a bill coming on provincial support, which I think is well deserved, and I'm looking forward to that. But then I would have imagined that this bill would comprise a bill to sort out the other problems. But it doesn't really. It's almost like a stopgap measure. There are lots of things we've raised. There's problematic issues which are not addressed here. So the question I'm going to ask is, what informs this particular bunch of amendments as opposed to a whole host of other amendments we could be talking about that deal with problems in municipalities right now that are not carried out, that are not being performed yet? Then my next one is, in the memorandum, and maybe I'm just blind actually, in the memorandum it talks about amending Section 55, but I can't see any Section 55 amendment here at all. Is there something I just missed? Then I also agree with my colleague here, the definition. Well, if you look at the bill here, yeah, the memo, it talks about amending Section 55. I don't know where it is. It is proposed that Section 55 be amended to empower the Minister to do A, B, and C. I can't see that amendment. So I'm just saying, I must have listened up this line. No, it's talking about one particular section. All right, they can answer it then. I just didn't see it. Next one, I agree with this issue that the definition of party office, political office, is very problematic. And I'm wondering why the department didn't simply say, you know, extend it to anybody who holds position in any executive, elected executive position in the party. Because the notion that you can be only one of those three designated positions would be problematic and the others are all angels, I also don't understand the logic of it. So I would imagine any executive office, elected office, would do the job. Or any, maybe not even elected, just elected office, executive office, because you do get nominated members as well, who aren't necessarily elected.
Clearly you know what you're talking about, both of you.
Well, I'm just thinking...
I'm just saying, you are the experts. You are the ones we are talking about in this legislation.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is...
me who's saying it.
I find it strange how the department has deliberately limited it.
No, it's okay.
There.
The department will respond.
And also, I want to ask, what is a political party? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know whether it's assumed what a party is. Is a party something which is registered by the IEC in terms of the Electoral Commission Act? Only. In other words, if a party is not registered to contest an election, then this wouldn't apply to them. It's only applied to those who contest the elections. But just to be sure, I'd like to get clarity on that. Then, Chair, this whole issue of performance regulations in 2006 and the legal challenge then, I'm not quite clear what it is that this bill is changing. Was the reason for the legal challenge then that the regulations were not supported by the Principal Act, in which case we're amending the Principal Act so the regulations work, or something else? Because the Principal Act, as I recall from before, always had a general empowering provision for regulations to deal with anything in the Act that required regulations. So in that sense, the Minister was free to regulate in 2006. I'm not quite sure why it is different now. But just for clarity on that one. Then, Chair, there's a provision here that if there's no suitable municipal manager or Section 56 manager available, then you can apply to the Minister or MEC for something to be seconded, right? Now, has anybody kind of done an audit to say that if this were the law we're applied now, how many people would in fact have to be seconded because we don't have enough people in the country to fill these posts that are skilled. I mean, is it anticipated that these secondments, that we, you know, we'll have the resources and the people to fill these posts? And linked to that, I suppose, is how long is a secondment? It could be fairly lengthy if you're struggling to find people, you find that the secondment becomes quasi-permanent. So I'm a little bit concerned also about these performance contracts. You know, to me, there's a big difference between a perfunctory compliance with a requirement that you have one, and you have one that's meaningful. There's nothing here that I see which deals with the issue of the quality of performance contracts, which are sweetheart contracts, which don't really test anybody's obligation to deliver much. And so you can compel people to sign something within 60 days, but if they're signing rubbish, then it's rubbish still. So I'd like to know anything about anything being done to address quality. On the issue of all these Section 56 becoming permanent staff instead of contract staff, I'm not sure I heard a motivation for that. I mean, I heard the statement that we want people to feel you have a career path and you're able to move from A to B, but is that a motivation or is that simply a consequence? Is there a problem, in other words, that has to be fixed, or what? Because it seems to be really what one's doing here is simply preempting a single public service, and this is simply a one step of the way to get there. And then lastly, Chair, I'm actually a bit concerned about this code of conduct provision at the end. To me, that reeks of unconstitutionality. I don't know. But obviously, the department thinks it's fine. But if you had a provision of rules of our house, imagine you passed a law here to say, Parliament may not pass anything which is contrary to another law. I mean, it'll be nonsense. But yet we can do it for councillors. I'm not sure that that makes sense to me, but I'll wait to hear the answers and engage on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to start with the proposed amendment to prohibit municipal managers in Section 57 from being office bearers in political parties. And I feel that there's nothing to make any difference in the quest for service delivery, bearing in mind the implementation of the other amendments, for instance, appointing suitably qualified people with relevant experience and the signing of performance management agreements within 60 days. And even further, the investigation by the Minister if the MEC fails to hold investigations into municipality within 90 days. So it's not going to make any difference if these people are office bearers or not office bearers, because if they fail to meet the requirements of their qualifications, if they fail to perform according to their performance management agreement, so they're just going to be like anybody else. Secondly, the number of qualifications and relevant experience for municipal managers and managers reporting to them. How are the small municipalities like the Palestine, which only has 6 wards, how are they able to afford to pay for these minimum qualifications of all these managers that you want them to have? I just want to know, on page 23, problem area 10, I'm not too sure if I got that correctly, but does the proposed amendment affect the collective bargaining agreement? So in other words, how does that work? Does Salga have to go through the ministry before they can go back to the unions? I mean, how exactly is that going to affect that whole process, and will that not make the bargaining process longer and maybe lead to longer strikes if that is the case? And I'm not sure if I understand at all what slide 26 means, so I just want some clarity on that. Thank you. Yeah, page 26, sorry.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I think something's missing.
Let me start by agreeing that I also find the wording in 26 very problematic. But Chair, you know, I feel very aggrieved that the minister didn't acknowledge me as one of the old pieces of furniture. I'll accept that with a small amount attached to it. It's nice thanking the minister and you, Chair, for the change. You know, we do our thing in the field, and we really get to meet the problems, as one of my colleagues has already said. And that's why I think this, I differ on the other hand with the previous speaker that that this piece of legislation is very, very necessary and important. Because you see, a performance contract can be met all the way from A to Z, and yet it doesn't prohibit political interference. A municipal manager could do everything in his contract and yet interfere politically and override the elected politicians in that council. So I think this is very important. But Chair, there's one or two things that I think and I hope I heard the presenter correctly that there's still a lot of negotiating going to take place from now until the bill is passed. Because you see, the one thing that I don't like is that, for instance, we're bringing in this very complicated legislation, and yet then on slide 14 we bring in the possibility of a waiver of the appointment requirements. Now, my experience is that waiver is going to become the rule. Whenever I want to get my buddy or my comrade or my co-cater into a job, I'll make a good point for finding reasons to apply for a waiver. I think you should have rules and that's it. Or otherwise, the good cause and special circumstances should be described very, very clearly. In other words, point by point. Otherwise, it's going to be open-ended and it's going to cause a lot of problems. The other point that I'd like to raise, Chair, is the one about not applying retrospectively. Now, you see, let's take the scenario that I'm well aware of, where the municipal manager in a district municipality that was named earlier on is a very, very senior member of the party, the governing party in that specific district and province. Now, this law now says this man can stay there forever. But you see, I don't know what the rules of that particular party is, but every year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever the case may be, that position has to be re-elected in terms of the particular party's own constitution. Now, I think if it has to be retrospective, it should be until the time when that position is re-elected. If that person wants to stand again for that same position, he should resign as municipal manager or as a Section 56 manager. So I think we must ring-fence somehow not applying retrospectively and not make it open-ended like this. The other point that Peter raised, I think, is very valid. And I hope you will be looking at some of the things in both the Systems Act and the Structures Act and a lot of the others that we find in practice. When we wrote those laws, we didn't think of the consequences. And a lot of them have determinations to say that this and this and this must happen. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't say what happens then. You follow what I mean? Particularly in the Structures Act. When and we're going to reconstitute municipalities again next year, all of them. And then it says within so many days or so many weeks, such and such an actions should be taken. But if it's not taken, there's no sanction in the book to say what happens then. You can stand on your head. Yeah. It's not happened, so what? So I think we must look at those things while we are amending these acts and look at these points that need to be attended.
Just want to come. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just by the way, in the bill we refer to clauses. So in the presentation from page 12 on the left-hand side, it should be clause 2 referring to section 54. I just found that a bit of confusing in the beginning, but anyhow, that's just by the way. Chair, just want to ask about, are we going to advertise and have hearings? You said something about that. I see that the department made all their inputs available to us, which we really thank them for, and that will take us a long way, but I was just about the way forward, just to hear from you, how do you think we're going to proceed as a committee from the NA, and it was referred also to SALGA and so on, that they perhaps there should be some time for inputs and have hearings. Then I don't want to go into too much detail of the bill, but I would just like to ask, there's nothing in the bill about dismissal, which I found a bit strange. I mean, we're so concerned with the appointments and that should go correctly. But when we come to the dismissals, where councils do all sorts of things, there's nothing in the bill to curb that because I think that is also a problematic area, or is it envisage that it's inherent somewhere in the way that you appoint that you can also use that, but I just want to hear about the dismissals. And then the last thing is just that also the applicability for people that are in positions now. As legislation stands, no one can be appointed on contract for more than 2 years into the new after the general election. So in 2013, every contract appointment will come in line with what is envisaged here because of that provision. But perhaps we can explore at a later date to do something a little bit quicker. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, on my understanding that you are still on a discussion of this bill, but I just want maybe to, I'm still on page 14, whereby Honorable Watson. if you read Chairperson from up in the bullet number one down to come to the fourth bullet to say a municipality to apply for a waiver, because he made an input of saying that he's not in favor of that bullet because maybe some comrades, colleagues will just apply for a waiver to the MEC, but I disagree with him because it doesn't maybe meant for municipalities. It will legislate even for smaller rural municipalities whereby this bullet will apply, whereby maybe they will advertise and make recruitment and there will be some difficulties whereby they can get a suitable candidate. And that's when this bullet will apply, not to bigger municipalities. So I agree for the cross. The only thing that I'm supporting is Honorable Smith, the M. The only thing I'm supporting Honorable Smith when saying there will be a waiver and the appointment of that somebody who's not having a requirement of that post for how long. So I'm agreeing with him that.
Chair, my advice is very short. It was just a follow-up on the issues that are not being covered in the bill, which I think should be covered, but I didn't remember it now since it didn't mention dismissals, and that's the whole problem of suspensions. There are such problems with suspensions. You would think that's the most obvious thing to be dealing with here. Why isn't it?
I meant to ask the Minister whether he agrees that this was tagged as a Section 75. It has such wide implications for municipalities. For the love of me, I can't see why it's not a Section 76 bill, because it excludes provinces totally from the deliberations and the proceedings.
I don't know. That wasn't my main worry. I'm listening to nothing, it's very important that day. But there's ambitions in most of these things. Maybe the PM is going to explain that, maybe they will be specific. Some of my main worry is that if, because I'm in the executive of a cultural organization or party, now I want to be elected. And I can't exist. But then I'm not. I want to get to know how is this thing going to make sure that I can't go to a constitutional court and win the case. I've been pressing with that. I'm trying to check how, because if you go to the Constitution, chapter 2, the Bill of Rights, go to the Freedom Charter, say every man and woman. And the right. I mean, if you look into this right, I'm just trying to get to know how I'm going to ensure that people don't get to vote. I'm happy about taking this forest because it's going to save us many things. But the other question that I have is about the regulations. There are regulations in the national federal where you're talking about the requirements. Minimal requirements for managers, municipal managers. Now, the ones that the department is talking about, are they the ones that are there, or linked there, so that because if you're talking about the chief judicial officer, it's clear what it is that you want from him or her, so that he or she can be appointed. But in the field, I'm not sure what I was talking about. Are we going to relate with them as they are in the national service, or are there others that will come up with, the department will come up with, and if that would be the case, I would advise that the department, I think it would be important, it speaks to those of the national social that very thing. I've got many questions, but my main worry is that they might be answered in the process of answering the ones like the way running, because I've got the answer from the honorable member, which I was a little bit worried, not because of the worry that raised by Washington, but what is that? When do we waiver things? It was things like tightening up and coming up with waiverings again. I mean, are we not going to pay the phone? Thank you for the question.
Yes, Adrian?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to know, throughout the presentation, that they talked about stipulated periods. Can we actually have these stipulated periods? Because it's very vague. The Act, I'm sure the Act's not, you know, it will be more specific than that. Thank you.
Your name, Chief, you didn't introduce yourself. I should have demanded that. Your name is? Sorry? Bonisi, Nis.
Right.
Oh, okay. No, I wanted to say you and Honorable Matila asks an interesting question. Well, this is my formulation of it, right? Why must my position in the organization that I have a right to belong to disadvantage me from a job for which I'm qualified? You are asking that question. It does not matter whether it is the stated one, even if you are an additional member, why should my position disadvantage me from a job for which I'm qualified? So that's the question that I hear you ask.
Thank you, Chief. I think the part of this bill, that's not a question, it's not a question. This bill will touch the provinces. This municipality is then there in the provinces. This bill should be revisit as a, to change Rupee Section 75 to Section 76. That's my request.
Okay. Honorable.
The member?
Wait, sorry?
No, Chairperson. On your worry and Tunka and him.
It's not my worry.
I don't think that there's a problem. You see, honest people like yourself can apply for their job. It's only groups who is going to.
journeys.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just, I need some clarity from the minister. The uniform and standardized systems, do they include the remuneration of municipal managers? If it's yes, I'd like to know how are they going to be operated, because to my thinking, the municipalities are not of the same, like they have the metros, and how is that going to be applied? That's what I'd like to know. Thank you.
The drafters, the department, now officials, including MPs, like using acronyms. Now, pardon me if I make this comment about when you do that. You are saying to us, you know this thing, you know it so well, you deal with it regularly and so on. So you don't care about who doesn't know about it. This is the effect of it. You see, when I'm independently looking at the EC, and you then proceed to scrap it there, and I don't know when I'm sitting alone in my, wherever I read, because I read everywhere. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Now you cost me a huge task to go and investigate. What does this acronym mean?
Yeah, okay.
So all I'm appealing to you guys, drafters, is that please communicate. One of the richest things about the South African Constitution is its simplicity. One of the best lessons we learned internationally is simple writing, even of law, 100. A great level, by a foot skill. Yeah. But you see, you're dealing with legislation that impacts on people's lives, that even us as legislators must understand it quickly, and we don't have time to waste to go and search for things that could have been clarified right from the onset. So in future, we will not accept your piece of legislation if it comes to us with lots of unexplained acronyms. In fact, there's no need for you to use acronyms. What are you lazy about? You're already wasting paper in any way. 2 trees have disappeared with your one document. So let's clarify. Let's do that. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, because it's how we communicate that stuff and so on. And I'm going to give to Ndula Stulo to comment or raise issues that he wants to raise about the legislation. But I also want to answer the first question that Domen asked. Yes, Domen, you were right. That's why I started with the conclusion. The Deputy Minister laughed at me that when I started with the conclusion, because I knew you were going to ask this question. Not only you, but other people as well have raised the same question. That. And that was that this is a precedent. From here, we will go to public hearings. There's a draft that's been circulated about, I don't know whether it's there already, for management of this bill, so that we can have public hearings. If it's nature, it requires that we do that. And just to say, by the way, in December, the local government system will be 10 years.
Yeah.
So some of the questions that members are asking, the department did say before that they are going to come to us with a plethora of legislation, reviewing the existing legislation. So I'm just saying that when we reflect on what we are doing, let's be mindful of the space we are in and what we are actually dealing with. It's almost a nearly 10-year-old system whose legislation we are looking at and trying to figure out whether this is what we say is some things we missed, and what are those things, and how can we remedy them, if they require remedy. Okay, so that's the sort of exercise that we are in. Honorable.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think this bill seems to be giving a direction. But there is something hidden somewhere which does not emerge. In talk of a political party, is clear what we mean. But
what about this thing? An independent candidate. Where does it fit? Because at minister level, somebody can be an independent candidate. But it doesn't talk of independent party, independent candidate. How do we make sure that we facet this bill to also include in a way or some way or other that determination where in a person can be an independent candidate? What does the regulation say?
All right. Let's is there anyone who still has a question to ask before you proceed? Sorry? Okay. Honorable Board, don't you have a question? You look like you have one.
No,
sir,
I'm listening.
Yeah. No, the reason I'm singling him out is because we were dealing with regulations in another meeting and he wanted to know where is this one that we're dealing. Now that he's here, he's not talking. I'm disappointed that you... Okay, Deputy Minister, lead your team.
Okay, with the permission of the chair, I think the fastest way to do it is for me to say a few things and then bring in Jackie and the team. So if the team feels they want to add anything, please put your hand up. And with the chair's permission, you can participate. The first thing I think we should explain is that Jackie Matthews is dealing with a bill for the first time in Parliament. So when I was a CIA, I used to say the same thing. Be slightly soft on him. I mean, it's the first time he's not a Mike Silvane who's got a thick skin and so on. So I take responsibility. I'm the political head for the problems with the slide present. I should have gone through it line by line, which I didn't do, so I apologize to the committee. Brutus will see to it that I go through line by line. And you're absolutely, it's like listening to myself saying, I don't want acronyms. You can't become from a chair to a deputy minister and change your views overnight. So I can tell you, I entirely agree with you. Again, Becky's not familiar with that, but Brutus, you're the chair of the legislation committee in the executive. You will go through line by line, and we don't use a single acronym anymore. From our side, we commit ourselves, except where it's absurdly absurd to say we should. Like, and if we use it the first time, obviously we put it in brackets, and afterwards we can use it. So that's agreeable. So Brutus, you see to it that I do my job. So I apologize to you. Some of the issues actually will be issues that will emerge clearer as we go line by line. Because you'll see some of the questions you are raising, like on suspensions, and it's actually there. It's just that Jackie, when he did it, very fast and said, but let me just deal with that as an example, Chairperson. It's this. But we're saying that when you appoint, suspend, or fire a municipal manager, you have to let the MEC know and the minister. Now, it's not that you can eat it. As Parliament, you're saying, on the one hand, the ministry is being intrusive. There's a hint that. On the other hand, you're saying, hey, what about all these other things that the minister and MEC are not having a say on? So we try to strike a balance between the two. So when you see the bill, you will see that in every cases, the MEC and the minister has been formed. But then the question you will ask us is, so what? What can they do about it? Well, that's a constitutional matter. Parliament will decide. Do you want to amend the powers and functions or not? And we are looking into that and so on. So the first thing to say is, we need to stop that measure. Peter is absolutely right. Precisely because of the stop that measure, this bill, there are many other things we are not addressing. So I don't think we should have any illusions. This is a stopgap measure. The question that you rightfully ask is, if it's a stopgap measure, why this particular stopgap and not other? What is the nature of the stopgap? The subject is, what is the relationship between these immediate stopgap measures and the broader issues? Well, the answer is very simple. Unfortunately, because of the need for consensus and consultation around those bigger issues, we are unable to come to Parliament at this stage with the broader issues, but I can assure you, in the mind's eye of the Ministry, and we've communicated to you vaguely, but we are clearer yet, we are very clear of how this links up with the broader. It's part of a strategy. The immediate and the long term are closely linked. Now, there's nothing to hide. In a democracy, it's the parties that give the government a direction. And you might know vaguely there's a certain party that will be turning 100, I think, in another 2 years. You might have vaguely heard there's a big conference coming up in 4 to 6 weeks, and you'll know that that will provide some guidance. But
thereafter, we will obviously take it to other stakeholders, not least the parties here, because we want to win consensus around this. So essentially, this is a stopgap measure. But secondly, the issues that you raise, it's very interesting. The theme that emerges from this is, what is the relationship between national, provincial, and local? In different ways, that's the same question from the chair that's coming up. What we are saying is that we are acting within the current constitutional dispensation, and no parliament will agree with us. But yes, it's true. We are testing the waters, if you like. We actually even think, if certain matters went to a constitutional court, let's be upfront, we think that the current constitutional court is more likely to be responsive to a slightly more oversight, slightly more activistic role for provincial and national. Because quite frankly, when the judges open their taps these days, the water that runs out is a bit brown sometimes. Sometimes when they want to ask Bold and Beautiful and they switch the thing on and Bold and Beautiful is 5 minutes into its program, it cuts off the electricity, not least in Johannesburg. So I think the judges are human. They are more sympathetic. You see, we can't have a situation, Chairperson, where you say on the one hand, what are you doing as national government in your oversight role? And then on the other hand say, no, don't intervene. So we think, Peter, Wattie Watson, this chair and me, the era of 1994 to like 2004, I think has receded. That the lawyers are arguing there are things we can do, even the state law advisors, that they would have said no 5 years ago. But on the other hand, what we must emphasize is, as we said last week in the committee, we are not going to detract from local government being a sphere unless Parliament decides that. We as government are very clear. Local government is going to remain a sphere. There's not going to be a major overhaul of its powers and functions. What's going to happen, though, is we're going to operate more cooperatively and more integratedly. On the issue of Sandra's role, perhaps Jackie wants to say something there, but essentially Sandra serves on the legislation committee of the department, the ministry which processes legislation. This power has been taken to them. My understanding is, I'm not sure what they'll say to Parliament, is that they're reasonably comfortable with the bill. Obviously, as local government, they'll be slightly uneasy. But that's my approach to the basic thrust of this bill, I doubt. But let me hand over to Jackie with your permission, Chair, about the role of CELGA.
Yes, I agree. During the consultation process is when there's a bit of public comment. CELGA was engaged, and they've indicated their support for the bill. And they also indicated that it was long outstanding. They thought, something like that should have been done, 10 years ago. There were a few issues, of course, which they raised, which relate more to clarity with regards to CELGA's role, with that of the minister, which we have thought is something that will be looked into, as we go into the regulatory framework. I'm not sure. I'm very supportive of the efforts that have been undertaken by the department, and the only issue where they needed some further clarity and discussion, that which we have agreed that we'll sit with them as we finalise the bill and the regulations with regards to a revisit, probably a revisit into the role of CELGA, on HR matters that will be looked into.
Chairperson, we have to say, obviously, it may be that the delegation that comes to Parliament will be different from the delegation we interact with. So you might suddenly hear that CELGA knows nothing about this bill, and this has happened before, and, I cut both ways. I've been a chair for a fairly long time. This chair and myself, I think, we're old institutions here. So, we're just saying we're being honest and frank to Parliament. If you hear otherwise, then you must challenge us. But we definitely know that CELGA is, I think they're a bit uncomfortable here and there, and for Parliament to decide, and we are quite sympathetic. We can include organized local government, as Jackie says. On the issue of the Section 75-76 bill, we've got, Fanny Logia, Vuyo, and we've got Andre. Maybe Fanny wants to respond, why is the 75 rather than 76?
State law advisors.
Sorry? State law advisors, yes.
On the tagging.
we tagged it as a 7-5-4 because it didn't specifically impact on the provincial government, but it also went to the Joint Tagging Committee, who also tagged it as a Section 75 bill. So it is only when it impacts specifically on provincial government that it is tagged as such.
Saying it was passed as a 75. Can only be passed by Parliament.
No. Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
It's a mistake from my side. It went to the Joint Tagging Committee after it has been introduced. So even if there would have been some sort of an oversight from our side, which I don't think there was, they also tag it, and they were also of the opinion that it should be tagged as a Section 75 bill.
Let me respond this way to the what UNIS call the subtext of what lies behind asking it to be tagged that way. You want to ensure that provincial interests and local government is properly represented. In the process of consultation, that's what we will make sure of. We will not proceed without their input. Whether they can veto, I mean, firstly, they agreed with it in the first instance. They agreed, they gave it permission as a Section 75. We didn't get an impression that they are objecting to it in any way, in the previous instance when the Systems Act. Now, if there are new views now, they will emerge. So let's deal with them. In fact, we would strongly suggest that we should communicate it from today onwards as strongly as possible to the provinces. And so that people must submit their observations about what they think about the bill, so that we approach it that way. Dominic?
Just quickly on this. The question is, does it now insert certain duties to MECs, which is a provincial matter, that might be the problem? I'm just asking that question.
And let's talk about that. The
No, Chair, is it only area? Because we don't have a problem whether it's a 75 or 76 bill. The problem is particularly for us in the NCOP.
Yes.
Well, if we have to start engaging with provinces, if it's a 75 bill, sometimes it's difficult, And if it's a 76, we've then been given instructions by the chairperson of the NCOP to then move to go and do what we call public hearings locally in the provinces and do all those things. Now, if that is not there, it is difficult. We just indicate to them that there's this bill and we leave it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We will allow the lawyers to talk about the bill. But any other comments on the substance? The substance of the bill,
if
there are any additional answers you want to give.
Thank you. And I'm going through the, we just started here. Sorry, do you want to speak on 75 or 76?
No, I don't want to speak on it, but
I must say
we'll have to consider it, but we haven't been involved in making that decision, but there are provincial implications, it seems to me. We just need to weigh it.
Yeah. You're saying they have provincial. I think, firstly, that usually, as I know it, but I could be wrong, when a bill has been passed by Parliament at 75, usually, whatever amendments occur, it remains at 75. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a substantial change which brings in the provincial government. Here, if you look at the Systems Act as I remember it, there are various functions the MECs do have here and there. All this is doing is giving additional functions. So then it was a 75. It seems to me, I'm not a lawyer, unless there's a significant shift now, it should remain as a 75. But you see, the chairperson, I think, has offered a wonderful compromise, which is say it doesn't matter whether it's 75 or 76 at the end of the day. Even if it is a 75, he's offering that there will be concerted consultation with the NCOP and the provinces. But that's a legal matter. It's just to say that as a department, clearly, it's not for us to ultimately decide. It's for state law advisor and parliament.
Yeah, but also even Andre's point about there are provincial implications. Are they substantial?
do they detract from the main thrust of the legislation? That's the, is your answer yes?
No, we will have to consider.
Okay, that, yeah, okay. That's the point, really. But also, in what I want us to address, okay, partly as a what the Deputy Minister has partly answered Peter's question about, what about the other issues? In other words, the objectives which the department is saying it wants to address. The what we should respond to is whether in fact what they are proposing does deal with those problems as the legislation for us is suggesting. So that's the issue that we must be addressing in our further interaction with this thing. So we will invite you and your underground structures, go brief them, tell them they've started with the legislation, let's haul in our amendments and so on, and your open structures and your side lobbies and so on. It would be useful to really get as much input as possible on what we are attempting to do here, yes.
There's a group of us that have to meet for oversight in Mafeking, so if you'll excuse us, we have to go now.
This is an interesting consensus. No, okay, just before you leave, literally on your way, let the Deputy Minister go through a couple of the issues that you raised as you leave. Yeah.
Really quick, because I think we've just started, actually. There's about 20 questions. We will visit all of them, but I just have the thematic ones, right? To be very clear, we are not, absolutely not, and I think now I won't bring the department officials in because time's running out. Is that okay? I'm sorry about this, but you'll get time. Andre, you can raise your question when I just finish, right? Why don't I quickly deal with the issues, and then, Andre, you can try. Yeah, I'll do it quickly, and then you can bring it up. Okay, very quickly, can we be painstakingly clear? We are not undermining the right of anybody to participate in politics. Okay? We are saying only that you can't be, the limited restriction is to office bearers. Now, you ask on the one hand, why are you restricting their rights? On the other hand, why are you not expanding from office bearers to all REC members or BEC members, whatever your structures are called, right? Now, our point is that we're treading carefully. This is a start. Later down the road, we might have to expand it. Secondly, we're acutely aware, as you said, that it could be somebody outside the senior managers. But we think it's one of the senior management position that if you're a political office bearer, you carry enormous weight. Not aware that you could be even a cleaner, an REC chairperson, not that there's any in this country like that, but we're aware of that. But maybe Parliament can provide an answer to that question. We thought we should go carefully, but if you want to expand it, it's wonderful. It's Parliament deciding for itself that it's going to do this. On the issue of why are we not dealing with councillors who have been errant and so on. That's not valid, as you know, in the legislation as it is, and in final legislation that's coming. So we are dealing only with the human resources administration of a local municipality. A lot of the political parties defined in the Home Affairs legislation, it also will presumably be those that are registered with the IEC, because it's only they who could be active in a municipality. And I thought you might ask, what about that particular party, your chairperson, and myself, serving, but its part, it doesn't stand on its own for elections, not at least now. On the issue of secondments, now are we saying secondments so much as saying that we are going to develop a database. At the moment, what the National Ministry has is a team of people that Job Satishu and the Minister work with in Intrakanipo, and they allocate them to different municipalities in Section 139 interventions. We are obviously developing such a database, and that will be, and so sometimes it's not going to be a secondment. You apply for a job, none of you makes it, the municipality says to the MEC and Minister, can you help us? So I'm looking for a permanent position, somebody from another municipality. Very quickly, I'll skip over all of the other. What about quality of performance contracts? That's addressed in the regulations that the minister is going to devise, which is why we say stipulated period, Adrian. The stipulation can't be in the law. It'll have to be in the regulation. The minister might say 90 days or 60 days, depending on changing circumstances and so on. But let it be clear that the quality of the performance contract is reflected in the series of other amendments that are currently in this bill. Then the issue of how municipalities that are poor be able to ensure that they meet the minimum requirements.
Now, here the issue is it's precisely the municipality's poor and weak that it often needs a strong municipal manager. And you're sitting minimum, not maximum. So in other words, you must have, and here when you stress, you don't have a PhD in public administration. You don't have to have that. The minimum skills will start out consistent with the qualifications, authority, legislation, and so on. We are very clear that we are not intending to undermine the collective bargaining process. I think you have to go, right? But can I just, okay, can I stop here and just maybe ask Andre? Andre?
Yes,
Thank you, Chair. Let me just deal with a few issues. If I skip some of the other colleagues should also please come in. First of all, first of all, in the memorandum, the referral to section 55, that is also being amended. We have dropped that particular one, so it is indeed a mistake that it is in the memorandum. I have seen that there are a mistake or two in the memorandum. That still refers to matters that we've actually dropped, so you would also be able to see what we have dropped in that way. I don't think I will go into the detail why we dropped it now. Yes, sorry. Secondly, on the question of the definition of a political party, we have actually decided not to include a specific definition as we think it is quite clear in terms of other legislation, the common law, etc., what the political party is. But obviously if the committee would feel that such a definition is necessary, one can think about that. That is something you might consider. It's not really a major issue. On the question of the motivation for managers becoming permanent and not being on contracts anymore, that's now the managers accountable to municipal managers. It is basically as stated, I think, quite clearly in the memorandum as well, that the whole idea is stability and also skills retention. We don't want it, it's specifically at that level where you have your town planners, engineers, and so on. And we don't want a situation where they can be swapped around and changed and fired and so forth every now and then. We believe that at that level of management, the situation with the municipal manager stays the same. He's on contract. But at that particular level of management, we need to retain those skills and to have stability in the municipality. Pertaining to the matter of the code of conduct provision, that basically says that it is a contravention of the code of conduct if a councillor votes for anything that is in contravention of local government law. We believe that is clearly very different from Parliament. Obviously, Parliament is in a situation where it can change any national law and so on, while there are provisions in the Constitution that gives Parliament the authority to make laws and so on that municipalities must adhere to. So councillors obviously have to know and understand what these laws state. And then when they contravene these laws in voting for specific proposals in a council, that should clearly be, it is in any event, a contravention then of the particular law or legislation. So, I mean, it could just as well be a contravention of the code of conduct. And we just stipulated that very clearly. Also, I think, in an endeavor to improve the preparedness and so on of councillors. Then, relating to the matter, office bearers, there was a point, if I understood it correctly, you made the point that it won't really make a difference, this whole issue of the limiting the political involvement of municipal managers and those accountable to them, because they have to meet certain skills requirements. I think the Deputy Minister has addressed the, it's actually a political problems that we have, that deals with the situation where the actual office bearers are municipal managers accountable to them,
They are the office bearers in the political parties, while the mayor is not at that level involved in that political party, and that creates problems. So it's those kinds of problems that we want to address here, not the skills one as such. Then with regard to the issue of the waiver, yes, we have thought about that one, and whether, you know, it we shouldn't possibly consider removing it, but in the end we have decided that especially to assist where there are small municipalities without the necessary pool of candidates perhaps or so, that there would be circumstances, and that's why we have limited the circumstances very specifically. Yes, we haven't defined that, but I don't think a legislation should do that kind of thing. It can do it in regulations and so on. But we have limited the cases where waivers can take place to a large extent. You'll see it says on good cause shown, and there must be special circumstances and so on. I think that limits it to a very large extent. And then obviously we make provision, because the sequence of things, basically how it would work, is that municipalities have to advertise nationally. And if they don't find the people necessary skills, they have to advertise nationally again. That is basically what the law says. Then there can be a waiver, but there's also the option for municipalities to approach the MEC and to request the MEC to second someone, to fill that gap actually, when maybe they don't have someone with the necessary skills, and when they are in, for instance, in a process of re-advertisement. Then there was a general remark, which I think would fall away to a large extent when you go into the detailed provisions of the law, that said, or of the bill, that said that it does not really say what the consequences will be if certain things does not happen, what the sanctions will be and so on. I think we have very particular sanctions in this bill. For instance, if people are appointed and they don't have the necessary skills, qualifications and so on, their contracts will be null and void. That's a very specific consequence. It says that there must be reporting that should take place to the minister and the MEC with regard to this whole appointment process. And it then says that if there's that one of the possibilities for the minister or the MEC is eventually also to approach court and to then declare, to get a declaratory order, for instance, a declarator that would specifically determine that contract is null and void. So I think there are, if you read the bill, you'll see that there are quite a bit of very specific consequences. The issue of dismissals, because the main local government turnaround strategy matter is we want to it deals with indiscriminate hiring and firing. We agree with that, and the firing aspect or the dismissal aspect we are dealing with in regulations in particular. So you will also get insight into that, I'm sure, at some other stage. As far as the issue of the constitutionality of the bill is concerned, particularly with regard to the limitation of political rights and so on, our view is that, yes, it can be regarded as a limitation of political rights, that is correct, but obviously the Constitution has a whole provision dealing with limitations and make provision for limitation, and we don't believe that this limitation go that far, particularly also whether because it does not, for instance, preclude someone completely for being a member of the executive of a party. It only precludes a person from being in the basically the top positions of that executive. So we believe, in view of the fact that we haven't limited that right to an extent that it really goes too far, it would indeed be constitutional. But as I say, all of you know Section 36 of the Constitution that deals with limitations. So we don't believe that a limited limitation here is inappropriate. There was mention made of whether there are stipulated periods in the bill, and if you read the bill line by line, you'll see that there are indeed stipulated very specific periods linked to the different issues. There was also a point about uniform and standardized systems, including remuneration of the municipal managers, etc., that municipalities are not of the same size. Now, obviously, when you have uniform and standardized systems, it does not exclude that these regulations may indeed make provision for differentiation between different municipalities, metro, small, large municipalities, according to the qualifications or classifications we use at the moment. So I think uniform and standardized systems would then obviously still allow the minister to differentiate when he makes these kinds of regulations. Those are basically the ones I wanted to respond to, but there are a few others that some of the other colleagues might.
Mr. and Mike, if you want to add anything, and ask Jackie to round up on behalf of the department, because Jackie is responsible for this bill. Mr. Kalipo, do you want to add anything quickly to any question?
Not them. I think we've covered quite a number of issues that I wanted to deal with.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of independent candidates, the independent candidates are not a political party. It's only one person, so it will not affect the issue of independence as a result. So if that person is independent and decides to go and serve as a municipal manager and is qualified, fine. So because he's not holding office in any registered political party. And then on the issue of why this issue about the municipal manager and the political office bearers, I think this whole issue of limitation is important in the sense that through the assessment of local government local governments last year, we observed that if people hold these two positions simultaneously, it compromises good governance. And we are all interested in ensuring that there is good governance at the local government level. And I think many would need to give the details of all those municipal managers who hold a political office and the cases of what happened in terms of good governance in order to deal with that limitation of rights.
Like, I think there's three or four issues that I'll just quickly run through. The first one relates to the 2006 performance regulations. I think the issue at hand was really the legality of the minister. I mean, whether the minister had the powers to prescribe minimum appointment requirements as opposed to the legality of the world regulation as a whole. So the court order that we have really is
It's more under the legality of the minister's power to regulate minimum appointment requirement as opposed to what says. There are other issues related to which I think Andreas touched on, dismissals, dealing with us, dismissals and suspensions. Can I ask honourable members that sometimes November 2009, the minister published the disciplinary coding procedures for, you know, in an attempt to address the suspensions in local government. Those regulations, you know, were revised on the basis of comments that were received by the end of January. But there was just a hitch, you know, between the National Treasury and our department, where we are currently trying to sort our difference because they've got a more or less, you know, a related mandate in relation to financial misconduct. So once we've sorted that, we hope the regulations will be promulgated very soon. And there will be an instrument that will be, you know, used by municipalities to deal with suspensions, dismissals, and so on. The other issue, I think, relates to the MFA regulations, the what they call minimum competency requirements in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act and the MSA regulations, Municipal Systems Act regulations. We have noted that consent, and we have already received comments from the National Treasury. So by the time we start, you know, working on the regulations, we'll take into account the bulk of work, you know, which they have already concluded so far. That will be taken into account. And I think that's all, Chair Macken. Thank you.
No, I don't want to add anything. I think it's been covered. Obviously, we haven't covered all the issues. The aim was just to give you a feel and to deal with the thematic issues. I mean, we're not going to deal with... And a lot of the issues, Comrade Chairperson, will actually become clear as we process the bill. But we also find, finally, we must say, Jackie and myself particularly, that a lot of things that you've raised are particularly valuable. And we really think that together, you know, the executive and parliament can process the bill, having the public on its say. So I think that we want to thank you very much, Chairperson, members, for the very useful inputs you've made.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and the Department, for this useful acting on some of the problems you have picked up, as Mike says. That as a response to those, these are proposals to deal with those problems. Their adequacy or otherwise, we will continue to engage them in the process of listening to others.